God. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 600-something. I truly don't know. I'm still on my healing journey. Apologies in advance, both for the cough drop in my mouth and the fact that I may cough, off and on again throughout the course of this truly three-minute spectacular. Thank you for your patience. Hope you have enjoyed the hopefully evergreen new episodes that have been put up in the last, how long ago was it? I guess almost 2 weeks. I had laparoscopic surgery at Lenox Hill just under 2 weeks ago. Doing really, really good. After the surgery, heard the thing that isn't exactly an A++, but is in fact what you want to hear. It was uncomplicated. So, or at least there were no complications during the surgery. I meet with a surgeon this week to go over pathology and some stuff that was discovered during, which I will chat about when I have a little bit more info, which is my way of saying I will chat about it when I have a little more info. But I'm so thankful for all of the kind words that have been sent on IG where I have been hibernating. I know this is the time where you're supposed to rest, but I have slept less this time than I would normally. Although honestly, like the last several weeks, I've been like physically uncomfortable. So that hasn't been a great time to sleep. But it is sort of the oddity of like, you're supposed to rest. But I cannot physically sleep more than 6 hours a night. I think because my body is still a little uncomfortable. But, my mom was here the first 24 hours after. It was the first time I've ever had surgery aside from shout out wisdom teeth, which does count when they ask you for your surgical history. Because I'm like joking it off. But in fact, that is something that you should mention. Doing okay. I get outside every day for a little Sarah stroll. And I unfortunately have weight restrictions for a while, which is a weird thing when you live in New York and also you live alone. Cause I'm like, how's this trash walking itself downstairs? And also, how do groceries work and everything else? So it has certainly been a learning experience, but I'm so thankful to be back on the mic. And my God, so I'm starting it in the easiest possible way. I have not seen a second of new Bravo since the Tuesday before the surgery, which is when I recorded late at night. I think it was like a New York Potomac deep dive I recorded. And then the very next day, skadoodled for a minute. So I haven't seen Salt Lake. I haven't seen Potomac. I haven't seen, I just watched New York and certainly Orange County. I know I've missed a lot, but I sort of selfishly didn't want to watch until I could record right after because I knew I was going to have thoughts about these shows. So I held off. I don't even know if that's selfish, but I held off as long as I possibly could and then woke up and was like, I'm ready to get to it. And the easiest show to unpack because it's the least amount of episodes for me to watch is New York. And then certainly this week is going to be all about deep dive catch-ups because I'm two episodes behind again on Orange County and Salt Lake. So I am certainly very excited to catch up. Now, I had heard the glory of staying on social media while you're attempting to not watch new content. I had heard that Brynn had done something that pissed people off. I thought it was something about like a coaching breaking the fourth wall, but I didn't know about anything else. And since I haven't really been fucking with Brynn this season and maybe last season, I honestly forget how I ended the season when it comes to my opinion of Brynn, but I certainly haven't felt besotted with her now. I think I'm just kind of tired of what I feel like is shtick, where it's like, I'm cutesy, I mean well, I do a lot of stuff behind the camera, behind the scenes. I come off, I think, as condescending. I don't allow myself to share my feelings because maybe she feels like she's in the middle of playing some sort of game. She wouldn't be the first one to do that. But I just felt like, okay, I get it. I am annoyed with it and I don't vibe with it. And I at least personally appreciate the honesty and connectiveness that I feel with like Uba and Sai, for example, when they're talking about Bryn, when they're talking about the rest of the cast, I feel kind of empty when I watch Bryn at points, at many points. I don't necessarily feel anything because I don't know how much of this just might be how Bryn lives her life and God bless, but this is also to me the like fully cooked meal that I think happens now that Housewives has become this huge thing. Heather Gay did a different version of it, which is someone who I think knows in some ways that they may have just won the lottery. And Heather came in kind of like brimming with enthusiasm and made it known. And I certainly fell in love with Heather, her first season on Salt Lake, that like she was a big Bravoholic. Isn't this crazy? She's like broken through into the actual universe. I think another aspect of that could be the fact that these women know what it is they're signing up for, but maybe you've cashed the lottery before actually checking the numbers on your ticket. Like, I feel like there's this feeling that because I'm a Real Housewife, I just get a little bit of almost like superstar, not superstar imposter syndrome, but like this expectation that the world that they're living in is bigger than it actually is. Like, there are points where I'm watching Bryn on New York and I'm like, oh, she thinks that this is like a much bigger universe than it is. It's a big fucking deal to be cast on this show. But I feel like there's almost this fatigue that it's either too much for her, which I get, or she's too good for this, which I don't, that is borrowing a lot from the history of the Real Housewives and isn't necessarily specific to like the new New York Real Housewives. There was a point where she said, I need to leave the trip, where I just genuinely thought like, this is why I kind of hate this show. Even though I don't necessarily think it's having a flop season, it's having the season that I would expect it to have. It's growing. We're getting to know these people more, but it's not popping in any way. Like, is it solid entertainment? I don't even know what solid means. It's I'm able to view it and not feel like, well, now I can truly go fuck myself during watching or right after, but I'm not necessarily enthused. I'm more frustrated by some of the stuff that I'm seeing play out. But what is it? What is the Elie Wiesel? Perfect time to quote Elie Wiesel. It's like the opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference. I do still feel ever so slightly indifferent to New York, and I don't think Bryn is helping matters. And the reason I say that is, so I was expecting this kind of like some kind of mishigas to take place where she's coaching somebody or something. And I thought that was when I was going to lose it. But I'm watching Bryn essentially teach Rebecca how to be a different person than she is, because that could make for better TV, which it wouldn't. If Bryn had said what she said about like, here are the pointers, I just said something that could be shady to you, so you should say, oh, you just sell sweatshirts at BravoCon to me, and then we can have a back and forth. When Rebecca was like, I'm just not that kind of person, I thought to myself, well, thank fucking God she remembered that. Because if we had just watched a scene, it would have been so much worse had we seen Bryn try to coach her and Rebecca attempt to contort herself into the kind of archetype that I don't think exists on New York anymore, nor really should it. Like, if you're gonna be a dick because it's true to you. And then you might be dragged by the audience, as several of these housewives were last season, for some of them through the course of the entire season, BCC Sai, and you might shift your next season or not. But the idea that she would have awkwardly turned back and been like, oh, but I have a clothing line and you just sell sweatshirts at BravoCon, would have been incredibly awkward. But I also didn't feel a ton in watching that moment. So I was like, how are people in like a little bit of a tizzy? Like, I was thinking to myself, I really thought I saw people reacting about something about Bryn. And then there was something about Bryn, which is Bryn tripling down on tone policing Uba, but doing it in the weirdest, dumbest fucking way, which is to say, I'm just trying to help you. It's not, she said this in a confessional, I don't want Uba to come off as angry. It's not because I think she's disrespecting me. It's about the trope, which I thought was a wildly fascinating perspective, one that isn't evident in any of Brynn's behaviors in the moment. Like, good to know they had like a lovely come to Jesus kumbaya moment at night with Aaron that we that we didn't see. Like, great that they had that moment, but thank fucking God Uba didn't listen to everyone, and by everyone I guess I mean Jenna and her audience, in saying like, no, don't bring up anything awkward, let's just all get along, because that's who wants to see it? What am I watching? Then I'm just watching like awkward adult sleepaway camp. Bravo had a camp version of a show however long ago. It flopped because nobody wanted to see adults camping in the way, I guess, that show was produced. It looked fucking terrible. I don't think I watched a single second. I don't want to see that on New York. I want to see someone sharing their feelings, especially important if they actually fucking feel them and get a response. It's like Brynn is stewing in her own frustration and then getting upset at other people because she won't allow herself a release. That's not Uba's fault. That's not anybody else's fault. That's like Brynn's decision of how she wants to appear on this show and maybe also in real life. Like, this could be how Brynn is on and off camera, but I don't think it is because we've gotten so many Easter eggy peaks from other cast members who are like, no, she will drag you. She'll just do it on the side. She'll do it when cameras aren't off. She'll do it when cameras aren't up, like via text, via call, whatever. So for Brynn now to package this whole like, Uba is coming off in a way that I think is negative for her, so I'm trying to protect her. It's not about when I am quite literally saying to her in scenes, like, don't swear, use other words, don't disrespect me. What she's actually doing is trying to ensure that Uba doesn't disrespect herself. What the fuck is that? Like, how does that make any sense? And also, if we just saw evidence on camera of Brynn knowing the cameras are on her and coaching Rebecca because she assumes it'll be cut or it doesn't matter, on the go job training, saying to her, do this stuff because this will like change your, you know, perception of how you're seen, or like this will help you on the show. Take my advice, breaking obviously the fourth wall. Have we seen any of that of Uba? Have we seen her say at any moment, like of recent, listen, the reason that I'm talking to you or I might come off as tone policing is because I'm concerned about a derogatory racist stereotype that I don't want to be attached to you? Like, have we seen any evidence that that's actually what Brynn is trying to do in these moments versus come across, as Uba says, as Sai has said, as just simply condescending? We've seen it with Aaron too. She comes across, I think she would phrase it as aloof, sure, but also dickish, where it's like she doesn't feel, she intentionally disconnects. She doesn't want to connect, have empathy, really be an active listener. She can take it only so far. And I thought to myself, on top of that, adding on top of this incredibly manipulative turn of events is, I mean, it was a fucking lot. To say, I want Oliver to marry you and he won't if he thinks you're the trope of an angry Black woman? Are you out of your fucking mind? Number one, you don't think Oliver knows that Uba is a human person who has the right to have feelings which may involve frustration and upset? Like, at what point are Black women not allowed to express feelings that might be perceived as negative? How is that Uba's responsibility to not allow herself to express emotion, which PS is also a part of her job? Why is it on Uba to ensure that she does not come across according to a racist trope? Why is it not on everybody else around her to realize that she's allowed to be upset when she is? And also, it's part of her fucking job. She's not crying in bed, being like, oh my God, everything's so terrible. I need to go home. I get it. I'm sure that filming is incredibly overwhelming. But who's doing a better job of being themselves at this moment? Not being concerned about whether or not they're being perceived as unlikable for whatever reason. I know that Brynn works in like crisis comms marketing and she's very successful at it. And God bless. Like, I want to see a single woman in New York kill the game. That's great. But when it comes to Housewives, I think there was an expiration date on the approach that Brynn took. I think at a certain point it gets tired or stale. And I am feeling that personally right now. Does it mean she's never right? No. But does it mean when it comes to policing Uba's feelings that she's putting so much more additional pressure on Uba to change the way that she is certainly allowed to respond because of something that is not her fault or her responsibility? Like, I understand I'm a white woman saying this about Brynn, who's a woman of color, but I also don't know that Brynn entirely understands Uba's experience. Like, I don't know that she's getting it. I think Uba saying to her at one point, like, stop fucking telling me what you were. She didn't say that. That's fine. She said it in a way that was, I swear a lot. I don't know that Brynn and I would have a great chat. I do swear. When Uba says to Brynn, English is not my first language, I'm like, Brynn, take note. Like, Uba is telling you the way that you are talking to her does not fit. Maybe it could fit in some way Brynn's experiences of how she needed to survive, but you don't need to put that on Uba. And the unfortunate reality of life is, regardless of how Uba responds, she's more likely going to be held to a higher, more negative standard by the audience, of which I don't know the breakdown of the demos of the audience for Real Housewives of New York. So to all 17 people currently watching season two, like, I don't know the percentage of viewers who are white versus non-white, but the likelihood is that like the Bravo universe can air relatively racist. If you look at social media, it's abhorrent. So to think that Uba is going to escape this terrible historically racist trope because of whether or not she lowers the volume of her voice is not taking into account the fact that racism is going to exist regardless of that. Like, it's not, I'm sure it's like a privileged perspective for me to say this on the outside of this conversation in many ways, but I just found it wildly manipulative, both for Brynn to believe this and also frame it as, it's not that I'm hurt because of what you're saying about me, although she absolutely referenced that with Jenna. They call me this, they call me that, they call me this. It's because I'm concerned about how Uba is going to be perceived. No, I don't believe that. I think Brynn is concerned about how Brynn is going to be received, which is why I'm like, what are we even watching? It's like, not Inception. What's the other one? Interstellar? I don't know. One of those fucking movies that I don't understand, where it's like, we're watching the show, watch the show, watch the show. And I don't know where the totem is, but nobody has a spare apple, I guess, for me to grasp. I found myself frustrated, slightly infuriated, and annoyed, I guess, overall. Just a fun little combo of the three. Put that in an apple fruit smoothie, because I also like go off of how the rest of the cast is responding to Brynn. And in real time, people are annoyed with the fact that Brynn does seem to speak down to them and is extraordinarily passive aggressive. Passive aggressive still matters. Passive aggressive is so fucking annoying because the person often thinks that they've won or they have won because they haven't raised their voice. It doesn't mean what you're doing isn't manipulative. It doesn't mean what you're doing isn't controlling. It just means that you are behaving in a manner that's different than the person who's allowing themselves to raise their voice. Brynn is no less like manipulative or negative or whatever because of the way she handles things off camera and because of the distance she puts between herself and the cast on camera. And at some point, someone needs to address it. I don't think it'll be Andy at the reunion, because I actually don't even know how close attention people are paying like on production, off production to New York. But that would be a question that I would have, of like, there's a distance here. we can talk about Bryn's absolutely deserve to be spoken about and discussed trauma. We saw her connection to Raquel talking about her trauma and not being, oh God, and not being acknowledged by her father. Like, there's a connection there. Bryn has gone through terrible, terrible events and has survived them and been able to thrive. She deserves a lot of credit for that, and nothing will or should take away from it. But also, there's a distance she puts in between herself and other people when they're at points of like fighting or someone holding her accountable, not even fighting, but like conversation, where she does come across as condescending. And surely there's some sort of connection there, I would think, to like how she's protecting herself, but it doesn't make it okay. And it doesn't make it less hurtful to the person trying to connect with her in that moment, or someone looking at her and being like, can you please be a friend? And I get that when Uba started talking to her, I'm sure she wasn't expecting Uba's response to be like, here's the stuff that really upsets me, including that you constantly cut me off. It was apparent Jenna was very uncomfortable with it. Oy. Bryn obviously was uncomfortable. The rest of the group was uncomfortable with it because they thought that now is the point where we get to move on. But the show comes in between that. Like, the things that you could do in real life if you want to shut down an argument and fight, the show does not want you to do, because then we have what is typically known as a flop season. We don't want that to happen. The whole show is about conflict resolution. We need to have conflict in some way in there because we need to have tension and stakes. If everybody's just admiring each other's vagina-shaped jewelry, and P.S. those earrings were gorgeous, and I absolutely didn't recognize them. So, I mean, Raquel just continues. Oh, I fall in love with her every single episode of the day. I fall in love with that woman every episode of the day, every hour of the day. I wish there was like a version of New York. I would never do this, but like, of just watching Raquel. Maybe I just need to go back to the safe space that exists when I watch Raquel, because I'm like, this woman understands what it means to be on reality TV and also what it means to be like a present human person in this world. And we are so fortunate that she is so connected to herself, her feelings, how she expresses herself, that we are all the better for it, I think. Just personally, she's like my MVP of this season so far. And I know we're only 4 episodes in, and oh God, I wish we were at 12. Really got to tell you. But that is also because I haven't seen New Bravo in a minute. And I think I'm feeling a little extra zesty because I haven't had my comfort blanket and bottle, also known as Real Housewives of Orange County. And I haven't seen Salt Lake, which is usually the reward. So there is something to be said for the punishment I gave myself for starting with New York. But I also feel like, listen, nobody's as good or bad as how they come off on TV, but Bryn is certainly not as good. And I think there's this like new generation of folks cast on Real Housewives who know it's a golden ticket. And duh, of course they do, because it certainly can be. But then I think to myself, like, this whole adorable thing, we've done it. Let's see something else. I'm watching Erin at one point this episode, and I'm thinking to myself, God, I fucking love watching Erin on this show. Like, she gives me a little villain energy, and I love it. I don't know how much of that she'll reveal, but when Erin comes across as herself, which does include a certain amount of bitchiness, which I appreciate, like, that's the kind of Erin I want to see. Jessel is sort of fading into herself a little bit, but I do also think Jessel is a solid ensemble member. I think Jessel is best at points as like the reaction face. She doesn't necessarily need to be at the core of all of this, but at what point are we just kind of looking around being like, okay, is that all there is? Like, is that all there is? Now I feel like I'm a cabaret singer on Sex and the City. Is that all there is? And also, sidebar, one of the days that I was able to let myself outside, go for a little stroll, walked into the set of And Just Like That, filming directly outside of my apartment, Sarah Jessica Parker as Carrie Bradshaw, video on my social media. One of those moments where I was like, this is not happening. This is happening. This is bucket list. The inspo behind the cloth, everything else, so much is owed to the glory that is Carrie Bradshaw. And even if I see her filming and just like that and not on Sex and the City, attention must be paid. So that was a great moment for me. In thinking of imaginary New Yorks, which one do I want to be a part of more? New New York versus In Just Like That? It would be New New York, but that's not really a great match. That's Love All from the earlier, I guess, group tennis match, which I did actually enjoy because I thought everybody looked fucking adorable and loved what to me looked like legitimate tennis outfits. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I know tennis from like watching Netflix sports series about tennis and following her queen, her holiness, her highness, Serena Williams on Instagram. I don't know a fucking other thing about it. So, I mean, the fact that like these gals didn't know how to play ball, I'm like, well, I'm less concerned about that on the court than I am off. I'll tell you that much. I never knew you could treat depression symptoms from your phone. But with this prescription app called Rejoin, it's possible. It's for adults age 22 and up with major depressive disorder who want to add to their antidepressant medication. And get this, it's the first and only prescription app authorized by the FDA to treat depression symptoms. Rejoin does not replace your current medication. Be sure to use as directed by your healthcare provider. And if your depression symptoms worsen, seek help immediately. Get started today by talking to your healthcare provider or visiting meetrejoin.com. That's meetrejoin.com. As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And you know who else is? My dear, close, personal best friend and also deity, Jennifer Lopez. J-Lo is actually the reason that Google launched Google Images, because of that infamous Versace dress. And she's still, 20 years later, more sought after than ever before. With skin like hers, it's not a surprise. Love don't cost it a thing. But I don't want to continue to wait for tonight. Whoa. And thanks to J-Lo Beauty, we can glow right along with her. Get that J-Lo glow for yourself with J-Lo Beauty's Deluxe Kit, the one-and-done skincare solution clinically proven to tighten and lift for instant, long-lasting results. And much like my dear best friend, Jen, I absolutely agree. My personal favorite is J-Lo's Limitless Glow face mask. It is so soothing, easy to apply, cleansed my skin, had the mask on, and truly was having a spa night at home. So if you're tired of trying to crack your own skincare code, try J-Lo Beauty for 60 days. If you're not completely satisfied, just return the bottles, even if empty, and get your money back. Want that J-Lo glow? Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls and get a special gift of 4 free masks for listeners of Andy Scrolls. Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls for 4 free masks and free shipping today. That's jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls. I started taking Hormone Harmony because for me, that time of the month feels like it became the entire month, dealing with cravings, bloating, not feeling like myself. Well, now it's easier to manage PMS and menopause with Hormone Harmony. My number one, supporting hormonal balance and regulation. Hormone Harmony also helps relieve symptoms of menopause, improves sleep quality, relieves hot flashes and mood swings. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It is zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews, and there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndyScrolls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndyScrolls for 15% off today. So, I mean, I get it. I really thought this whole like Rebecca coaching thing was going to be more than a moment than it was. I just kind of feel like what did I just witness? It was frustrating to watch. And also there was something that Erin said at the very end of the episode when Brynn was upset and saying she was mad at the group for not sticking up for her. Spoiler alert, Brynn needs to fight her own battles. For someone who's very, very focused on teaching other people what they're and how they're allowed to fight, sweetie, people were, first off, very uncomfortable and were defending you during that conversation, were saying, let's make sure that Brynn's voice is heard. What else did you need them to do? If you needed them to do more than that, well, then you're not doing enough of your own job. You should be able to sit in discomfort. And if that is too much for you this early on, I get it. It's a human reaction. But Brynn's instinct oftentimes is to shift blame on other people for being too upset about things that she herself has done and then questioning why the group didn't rally enough in her response. They actually did. You got the thing you wanted. You just didn't get enough of it because you're too selfish or you think that you don't deserve to be treated poorly. Babe, welcome to Bravo. Everybody gets treated more poorly by members of their cast than they sometimes deserve. But also, should your feet be held a little bit to the fire? Yeah. And my guess is that Uba and Sai are not going to let you get away with this like pout thing that Jenna so frequently does. So thank God for Uba and Sai, because without them, I don't even know what this show would be. Just like awkward giggling for 44 minutes plus commercials. Don't you get that on this very podcast? Do we also need that on BravoTV.com? And it's not like I'm saying like Brynn shouldn't be on the show. Brynn should absolutely be on the show. She is creative. She can be funny. She can make solid points. But do I think she's like shouldn't be held responsible for her behavior? Do I think she's like too good to be dragged? No, babe. Like, God, could any of these people last 15 seconds on OG New York? I think not. What the fuck? And you tell us that you're a fan of OG New York. You've told us that, again, new generation of housewives are themselves Bravoholics. And great. I mean, to a certain extent, not great, but also great and also realistic. But you think that you're above the law. You have no idea how much easier the law is on New New York than OG. Luann could have swallowed you whole and then had a bagel presented by Jake Cohen, who is, in fact, a very big deal. So when he showed up, I was like, oh, shit, this is not what I was expecting, but damn, like, good for you for getting on camera, and also good for Erin and good for everybody else, because that food looked fucking incredible. That was a, I don't know if it's like niche New York, but he's a like legit celeb in his own right and like fabulous. So was very excited to see him show up. He also shows up, I think, relatively frequently on Jill Zarin's Instagram stories. And somehow, somewhere in Somersville, Florida, Jill Zarin just heard her name and perked. So, you know, it happened. It was an episode. I don't know. Am I like too frustrated at Brynn? Entirely possible. But someone has to be. Like at a certain point, like having a strong take about Brynn news at 11. I mean, how could you not? And but I get that people might not, but like also, I don't know. I'm just not like delighting in her energy. And I thought her responses to things like it really truly didn't pass the smell test. Neither did going into an extraordinarily overpriced market, which we love. We love. No, we don't. But going to a place that's resided in by many bajillionaires and then wondering if that's the place to figure out, excuse me, if that's the place to figure out how much milk costs. Milk does not cost $9 at most places in New York City. It might cost that when you're in the Hamptons. So I'm so thankful. I forget who said it, but I'm so thankful that somebody reminded the group that like this is not normal pricing. This is pricing that prices out people who've lived in the Hamptons for a while. And also it's priced that way because it's, I don't know, forcing people to pay it. I mean, like, welcome to terrible living in the New York City area. So milk is not $9 here on the Upper East Side. Milk is $9 if you get a couple milks. I don't even know. Oh my God. And there was something, avocado oil was like 16, eggs were 8. Like, and we're making fun of Jessel for not knowing that. I'm thankful she doesn't know that. If she was spending $8 on a carton of eggs, I would have some concerns, as I do about the price. I don't know. I assumed when she started saying, like, we're paying $1,000 a month to store our eggs, that she was just speaking out of her ass a little bit. And I Googled it. It seems like at most places, not a 90210 zip code. I don't know why that matters. But, you know, if that's a place you trust, God bless. But it seems like nationally, it's around several hundred to maybe $1,000 a year to store embryos. That's a lot of money. And I'm sure it can range. But $1,000 a month does not track to me. I need to understand that. I also need to understand how she wasn't aware of that at a certain point. Like, how did this just become news? But also, you're telling me you spent $12,000 a year to store your embryo. I don't even does that exist? Can a Beverly Hills 90210 based AG please let me know if that is a thing? And if you have paid this fee before, like, what did you pay? I just think $1,000 a month feels really fucking high. I mean, hashtag, like, the rent is too high. Where's that gentleman at? Like, the rent is truly too high. I am also confused as to what Jessel is doing. If she's, like, not taking the train, she's sleeping a lot, God bless her. You know what? You have to. Living in New York is stressful. Get as many, I'm missing the Z's. Get as many Z's as you possibly can. Absolute New York queen. But, like, she's living in such a bubble. How does this work? Is it Pavit is just, like, picking up a lot that you're putting down and that's how it works with you guys? Or is he annoyed at this point? If you really don't want to take the train and do other stuff, there are certain just hallmarks of being a New Yorker. It doesn't mean you have to take the train every time, but you don't want to take it not even once, just that one time to go on that date night where you pretended to be shocked at where Pavit took you. You certainly had no idea that this might become a different kind of moment. I don't know. It wasn't an entirely bad episode. There was stuff I appreciated. First off, you know, representation matters. Love seeing a Shabbat that's not attended by Ramona. I could never go back to those episodes of AG because I was on fire after watching the Black Shabbat arc. I think that's maybe, and the to be continued, I think that's among the absolute worst that Bravo has ever done or produced or edited. That was really, truly, like, shockingly bad content that normalized hate in a way I was like, and ignorance, tried to celebrate it and make it into an LOL. I'm like, we get more of that as Americans day to day. I don't need that on Bravo without something else. So great to see, you know, a solid, lovely, loving Shabbat, genuinely, and great to see Meredith's journey on Salt Lake, noting that I am 2 episodes behind. So that was a moment I appreciated. And obviously, as mentioned, watching Raquel open up, like, what she experienced in having a parent, I mean, parent is not the right word, them leaving when she was 1, but seemingly never being a part of her life. And then she's 11, wants to reach out. And this motherfucker is so mad that his biological child is calling him after not speaking to her for damn near a decade. In fact, a decade on the dot. He tells her never to call the house again. Are you fucking kidding me? It's, like, hard to imagine someone being that awful, except of course that awful exists, and how traumatizing it must have been for Raquel and her mom. And the fact that, like, you know, she, I think it was, I don't know if it was Raquel that told her uncle, I think it was her mom told her uncle, this guy's brother, what happened. Uncle freaks out, as well he fucking should. So this motherfucker invites her to Thanksgiving. I mean, talk about high stakes, talk about a lot of stress in general. Has her and her two siblings, who she, I believe, hadn't met before, but I might have understood that incorrectly. They take photos together, and then he cuts the photos so they each get a copy and tells them they're done. Are you fucking kidding me? The fucking chutzpah of this man. I mean, man, LOL, of this piece of shit. Like, literal piece of shit. How evil? I don't even know. Like, I don't even know how to phrase it. It's, he seems to pleasure in traumatizing, you know, children who are also technically, biologically his kids. I just can't imagine the selfishness and greed and abuse and just vile, vile behavior. To do that to an 11, now 12-year-old is wild. And then the part B of this is, you know, this is all about her last name. And it, well, it's actually not my biological father's last name. The conversation that she had with her mother after that of, you know, I want to take your last name, and her mom saying no, because my dad was an asshole. So both of these people looking through the family history to find a name that does not connect them to the trauma of the man who carried theirs is, I mean, the intergenerational trauma of it all, the intergenerational healing, like the absolute healing journey. I'm so thankful that her mom said something, not just for Raquel, but absolutely for herself, of like, this is an opportunity for me to reset, for me to reclaim my name, my life, my legacy, is profound. I think that is absolutely profound. And the way her, like, clear-eyed way of discussing this, which has to be so fucking stressful, to say this to people you've just met, to say it out loud, to say it in front of a camera crew, and to really put forth this journey, I don't even know, thesis statement, lifestyle, that it's not about allowing the trauma to define her, but also, here's a window into how you could understand me. Like, this isn't all of who I am, but this is a part of me in my life, and I'm not going to pretend it didn't exist, and I'm reclaiming it, as she reclaimed her last name. And also, you know what? You hear these stories of dumb motherfuckers who abandon their children, whatever they do, treat them like shit, and then that kid gets rich, famous, whatever, and they come crawling back. I don't know if his ego would allow him. I don't even know if he's still alive. I would hope he would leave her alone, but he obviously doesn't have the best instincts. I mean, all I can think to say is, like, how fucking, how much I fucking respect Raquel, and how appreciative I am for her sharing this, because it is those moments that certainly connect the people in the cast with each other, but also the greater audience is like, this is why I'm watching this, because yes, of the bells and the whistles and the conflict resolution. But there are these moments that feel like breakthroughs for us, not a breakthrough in the moment for Raquel. She obviously has lived with this, experienced this, moved through it, but also this moment of like, surely I didn't have any idea that she had experienced this before this moment. And I'm so thankful to her for being vulnerable, because I would assume that filming on Housewives has to be the obstacle of feeling safe in an environment that certainly might not for a lot of the time that you're filming and still allowing yourself to open up, and you don't know how it's going to be received. You don't know if the people you're opening up to deserve to have that kind of vulnerability shared with them. Like the respect that she's still giving herself in opening up and sharing this story for herself so other people can have a window into what she has gone through. Doing this process that, like, where we expect vulnerability, but it so often isn't deserved, going by how the audience, you know, frequently like shits on it. Mia's alliances and whatever else, and because everyone puts on their little tinfoil housewife hat and goes online and is like, well, I'm going to call you a stupid cunt because that's what I believe was bleeped out 6 years ago. I just am really appreciative. I'm appreciative to Raquel for sharing that and with the cast and with us, and hopeful that there will be more moments, not necessarily directed to trauma, but more moments of what feels like genuine connection with the cast. Also, speaking of genuine connection or whatever, the Sai, and who is sitting next to Sai? Was it Bryn? There's somebody sitting next to Sai, maybe Jessel. I forget, Aaron, but at the kitchen table, oh, I think it had to have been Bryn because there was this whole through line of Jenna letting Bryn wear her diamonds, which is a moment. Those diamonds are extraordinary. But Jenna just kind of like throwing out there that it wasn't a promise ring. She's in fact wearing an engagement ring, and the cast not knowing that. I mean, was she just saying promise ring? She's saying it's because like they had to work a way around the kids finding out or telling the kids or some shit. But like your castmates don't know that you're engaged. Isn't that shouldn't that be a thing they should know? Are we like not talking at all, or you're hiding so much about yourself? The number one thing I want to know is what came out from last episode or last episode before of like you were having money issues. Like, let's talk about that for an hour and a half, because I find that fascinating and truly would love to know more about like how she worked through it, the stress she was under, the fact that she's seemingly like swimming in money Scrooge McDuck style, maybe in the backseat of that Bentley that cost $9 zillion. that's a real level of currency. I truly want to know that, because I think, I mean, talk about transformations. Like I want to know how you got through that, because I can't imagine how fucking stressful that is. Also, while at that point being still like a huge fucking name and maybe not necessarily paying some of those big ass bills. Like I would like to know that, please. But also how do we not mention in some of these like loving text exchanges and whatever with members of the cast that, hey guys, guess what? I got engaged. Maybe don't tell anybody or whatever, but the ring that I said was a promise ring is really an engagement one. She has a tendency of doing that, doing these like winks to the audience when she doesn't want to give us any information, which is fun when you're on a reality TV show that's all about giving information. She did on Watch What Happens Too, where she's like, it's an engagement ring, but how do you know we're not already married? Well, then just tell us, Jenna, because are you spending too much time with Bryn? Like this coquettish kind of like, will she, won't she? Just tell us if you're engaged or not. It's enough. We know that your fiance is wonderful and fabulous. We don't know that. We've never met her, but we believe you. And also, she's like an incredibly successful, super, super successful, extraordinarily talented fashion photographer. So like, good for you, Jenna. But also, just tell us, because we don't get enough of your insight into that aspect of your life where we know whether or not you're joking. Because we know at the end of the day, we're not going to get verified information, nor will your cast, until these like weird one-off moments. Couldn't we have an engagement party that I guess just includes you and maybe your future mother-in-law, since your fiance doesn't want to film? Can we not just have a moment where it's not like the wink, wink? We get a lot of winks. Bryn has taken all of the winks allowed for this show. We don't have any more winks or fucks left to give. So just tell us what's actually going on, because when you want to pull back a lot, season two, because you're allowed to, because you're a fucking superstar, season one, one of the best premiere starts of any newbie housewife. She just really fucking killed it, and it was a delight to watch her. Can we not just like use less words, but have them be succinct and specific and honest? I don't know. I don't love the like, I'm gonna flirt with the reality of what's going on because I don't want to share it. Well, then what are we doing? That's more of a question, I guess, for the network. But maybe that's just her style, where she's looking for attention by saying, I don't want attention. And also, I'm going to wear this 9 bajillion carat. Oh my God, I would love to try that motherfucker on. That ring was gorgeous. Jenna's taste in jewelry is phenomenal. Like, keep wearing those pieces. She should keep wearing those pieces. And Raquel's taste and style is flawless, honestly. Like, both of those women, I just watch them, I'm like, holy shit. Like, they're both fabulous, incredible, smart, and very, very specific. They have very specific style that both feel just incredibly singular. And I love it. I love it. I loved Raquel's vagina earrings, which I did not recognize. And I loved Jenna's diamond. And I would just like to know, before a flyaway comment before a bagel brunch, that she's actually getting married, or that the cast knows she's getting married because they're all friends. Wink, wink. Isn't that's what's happening? And I know, instead of getting into some of Brynn's like passive aggressive stuff, we're going to spend an awful lot of time at the reunion on the sex dungeon. And I don't, just her descriptions of, I need to go back in, because I was absolutely shaken the first time. So there we are. Stuff happened, right? We had me not doing the fashion police, Brynn doing the tone police, a sex dungeon moment, Shabbat. This is like in the order of things I was thinking about. Brynn wanting to ensure that Oliver and Uva have a happily ever after in her own fun way. There was a lot going on. I'm curious as to AG thoughts. Slide into my DMs. Let me know your satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns about all things New York. And yes, let me know about Orange County and Salt Lake and Potomac. And I will potentially share those on an upcoming Patreon satchel spectacular on Patreon, the number one way to support the pod. And I'm excited to catch up on the episodes of, thank goodness, three far better franchises than the one I just watched tonight. And I'm curious for everybody's thoughts. And also, if I'm completely on the wrong side of where I should be when it comes to Brynn's explanation of why she thinks Uba's shouldn't be communicating when she's mad, let me know. Send me a satchel. It may be shared on a Patreon, and I am so curious for AG's thoughts. And on that note, a week away from a big fucking election here in the US of A. So I'm including a link in the show notes to visit whenweallvote.org. Make sure you're registered and come up with an action plan to vote. And follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. And what a joy to be back. I'm so thankful. I missed recording. It took me a second. I was like, what am I? I've only recorded like 13 or 72 episodes. No, 600 plus. And it had been a minute. So God only knows what I said during this episode, unlike every other one where I'm just saying wild shit. But let me know your thoughts and feels on New York. And I'm very, very excited to go straight into Orange County, Salt Lake City, and Potomac. We are so truly blessed. Thanks to all of you again for your patience with episodes that reflect ongoing existing Housewives content. Excited for a week to catch up, and I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.